WMD, RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are. And I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. And not just any Code Delicious, one of my favorite parts of the program, Culinary CPR, with my cohort in the kitchen, Chef Luca Parrish. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. You've seen him on Food Network. He won Guy's Grocery Games. He is officially... he is officially the mayor of Flavortown. I think Guy be willing to give that up. You've seen him on PBS, you know, taking the so-called experts to school on how to really do Italian food. And he's going to share a great Italian dish with us today, porcini mushroom dusted beef tenderloin medallions with a porcini mushroom and sherry cream sauce. Chef, you had me at porcini, my friend. I love them. I absolutely love them.
There is very few memories I have that are stronger than my mom would always make on Sunday is a porcini mushroom risotto. Not just regular mushroom risotto, but porcini. And we had in our freezer at all times a one-pound bag or a half-kilo bag, a little more than a pound, of porcini, dry porcini mushrooms. We would never be without. It's like people have milk in their refrigerator on a regular basis. My freezer always had porcini mushrooms. And
Is there an advantage to keeping the dried porcinis in the freezer versus pantry? So, school us a little bit.
The advantage is this. What will happen is, because we would buy such big bulk of it, because porcini mushrooms are not inexpensive. They are the dried porcini mushrooms, if you're going to look at any of the dried mushrooms, are probably one of the more expensive ones that you're going to buy. But it's something that... You know, they felt we couldn't grow up without. And I'm glad. I mean, I got to say, that's a good thing about growing up Italian. But what happens is, and it happened to them once before. You keep it in the pantry for too long, they do tend to. You could find butterflies in there, and they're a little form of moth that would grow in there. So if you're not careful with it, if you have it for too long, they attract items that you don't want in your food. They're not a big deal because you're still, I don't think they ever threw them away. It's just to preserve them and hold them. It's something that I don't even think if it needs to be done, it could be an old Italian wives' tale that they put it in the freezer to keep them that way. But it worked out because they're dry already. You really don't need to do that anything to them. It's about keeping them in a place where nothing will get to them. So if you just keep them in your pantry, well sealed, just like any of your other dry items, if you keep it well sealed, you're going to be fine. I think they just had a bag that wasn't well sealed, and that from then on, that I still have the memory of seeing it floating in the bag, a little butterfly. It wasn't even a bug; it was a butterfly, but a moth, and it was the color of the mushroom. So that was kind of cool.
If people buy, when people buy an industrial, jar of peanut butter, if they knew how much insect matter they were actually eating. people would be selling a whole lot more of that cricket flour and stuff that they use.
And really,
in many cultures around the world, people eat insects, all the time.
Right. And I think, and trust me when I say we are very careful about making sure that everything is, to code and all that kind of stuff and what have you. But if you think back, the grain that's picked up and then processed, it's not like they are able to clean all that stuff before you get to it.
Right.
Maybe we shouldn't be talking about that.
This is a reality. And here's a really great sort of point when it comes, I always think about it when it comes to chickens, because you hear and you see, eggs that chickens were fed 100% pure vegetarian diet. Well, people think about chickens pecking the ground and eating seeds and this and that. But chickens are actually omnivores because as they're pecking at those seeds and the grain or whatever, they're getting the protein and other nutrients from the small insects that they eat. And actually the same thing from grazing animals such as cows, etc. When they're chomping that grass, they are ingesting, bits of insect matter as well. So it's just part of the circle of life. And you know, if you find out when you feed chickens, for example, 100% vegetarian diet, it turns out, what do you have to do? Well, you have to give them another kind of supplement because it's not their natural diet. And so, you know, I think that it's very important. And what we're finding out on the medical health end, it's increasingly important that we try to source out these naturally foods that not only is it, you know, a healthy breed, but that how it's raised is just so critically, critically, critically important.
Exactly. So I look at, I mean, when we talk about the porcini mushrooms and eating them, one of the cool things, and another thing that we used to do, is actually have them fresh, too.
I got one more gross out story, so I'm going to share this. This will, like, gross everybody out.
You're scaring me, but I love it.
Because if somebody's there and they're saying, well, not me, you know, I never eat a bug. I never eat anything that has a bug. You know, I grind my own peanuts. Here's the thing. If you've ever had a banana, take a banana and put it in like a Ziploc bag so nothing can get in or get out. And within days, you'll have flies. Because there's microscopic eggs in every single banana. So when you're eating it, you're ingesting, you know, that sort of stuff. So there's my, you know, if you want to like do a food gross out at your next gathering, you know, that there's one for you. I recommend saving that for Halloween time, but you know, use it. I'm giving you the ace goo card there. You know, you can throw out that little gem anytime you need it. And if you don't believe me, try it yourself.
What did our parents tell us when we were kids? Like when a kid eats dirt, well, they're going to eat enough dirt their whole life that it doesn't matter.
If I didn't have a bone sticking out of my arm, it was go rub some dirt on that. You'd be all right.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's just if sometimes we could be hyper careful and hypercritical of the things that are around us. I mean, the whole sanitizer thing and, you know, people carrying around hand sanitizers all the time with them.
Well, actually, and this is true. A paper came out about 3-4 weeks ago, and it said we are using way too much of that. There has never been any conclusive evidence that you know the really strong one that's like 99.9% bactericidal. So you know, not just soap and water, but we're talking about that, you know, the high impact gels and stuff is any better than, you know, a little soap or water and washing your hands off. But what it does do is it really creates an opportunity for these antibiotic and other types of resistant strains of bacteria to thrive. So they're actually recommending now that people start backing off with those hand sanitizers and stuff because there's no health benefit per se, yet we're introducing into our environment, you know, a potentially very dangerous situation. So there is a lot to sort of be said for that. And I think, you know, a lot of it, when we look at the gut microbiome, especially for people that are feeding, you know, younger kids, and the gut microbiome is developing, if you will, because part of it comes from genetics, part from what we eat. These natural foods are very important. And again, we see kids that do not play outside, do not get to go to daycare, or not exposed, as adults have immunologic issues because their immune system is not naturally exposed to these antigens that were built to come across in the environment. So, you know, eating a little dirt is a very healthful thing, I think.
I love it. Well, that brings us right back to mushrooms, because mushrooms are...
There we go, mushrooms grow in the dirt. There you go.
Yeah, because they grow in the dirt, and also because they are part of nature's breakdown of everything.
Very good.
Mycorrhizal relationship to breaking down stuff, and they are basically what breaks stuff. When mushrooms are forming, they're actually breaking down the dead parts of everything. So they're perfect for that. So it kind of brings it all the way around. I didn't think
they're having a good time,
food, bro.
They're having a good time doing it because they're a bunch of fungi.
Oh, I knew that.
One bad pun for the road. Yeah, you knew it was coming.
I was going to leave that for you.
Thanks. So you teed it up really well.
If you haven't had porcini mushrooms before, there's something that you want to really try. They're actually known as ceps in French, C-E-P-E-S. And usually to get a fresh porcini is rare. But they're harvested in late summer and autumn, and then they're dried. And the difference between a fresh porcini mushroom, which looks really woodsy, but it's phenomenal in flavor. Grilled with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and some good salt. It's really all you need on top of that. It has a great flavor, but the porcini mushroom part, the dry porcini mushroom part, is so much more intense, and you don't need a lot of it to break down. So to add flavor to what you're doing. So what we're doing is this porcini mushroom, we're going to do it a couple of ways. We are going to take dry porcini mushrooms, right? We're going to rehydrate some of them, use them in our sauce, and make this golden liquid out of it. And the other part we're going to take and put in a little blender or in a spice grinder or whatever you want, old coffee grinder where you don't use it for coffee, you just use it for porcini, like I do, which is kind of a waste because that's the only thing I use it for, but it's worth it for me. But I take the porcini mushrooms and I grind them till they're a fine powder, and that starts the crust on the tenderloin. And then I take other porcini mushroom dry, and I take those and I soak them with a little bit of sherry wine till they rehydrate, and then the sherry wine gets the flavor, kind of gets all this mushroom flavor in it too. So you have both of those, which is really good.
And these mushrooms, the porcini mushrooms, mushrooms in general, but I think especially the dried porcinis, they're concentrating these compounds, these amine compounds, which are responsible for that depth of flavor, that deep savoriness, which we call umami. And these are really one of what we would call an umami enhancer, a flavor booster. It's these glutamate type of compounds, chemical compounds that are just concentrated, particularly in something like a dried porcini. So when you put that on that tenderloin, you are taking, the flavor volume way past 11 to like 22. And it's that deep, earthy, beefy, intensity.
Exactly.
That when I was looking at this recipe, I said, oh my gosh, I could just imagine biting into the, that's crusty tenderloin with this, and it's just going to be, a nuclear flavor bomb explosion.
Yeah. And if you could use dry porcini mushrooms in everything from, pork loin to risotto, like I mentioned, to even just to enhance your chicken marsala to the next level with it, you'll absolutely love it. Now, for those people who can't or don't want to go into the porcini mushroom category, there are a lot of other dry mushrooms out there. You could do a chanterelle and shiitake, and in most sections of really good stores, they'll have varieties of different dry mushrooms you could work with. I am kind of a little bit of, prejudice to the fact that the porcinis are the best. So I will tell you to always get that, but if you wanted to try something in the meantime, you'll still get that umami-packed flavor. If you like shiitake mushrooms, you'll still get some of that flavor as well that you like in the mushroom. Should I give them the recipe now, or should we wait a little
bit? Yeah. We've teased them long enough. It's time because people are going, hey, we're the audience here. Time to give us a little red meat.
Yeah, there you go. So first thing we're going to do, so you have beef tenderloin medallions. Like, we got about 8. They're 4 ounces each. I like doing that versus doing a filet mignon, which is a whole one, because it takes longer to cook. And if you're new to cooking tenderloin, you want to cook it to a rare, medium rare. That's what I like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you don't want it to take so long that you're uncomfortable about the cooking temp. So doing them in 4-ounce medallions also has a nice plate presentation. That's the way I like to go. You can use any steak you want with this. If you want to do a ribeye instead, feel free. There's a lot of other ideas you could do with that. A little bit of olive oil, salt, black pepper, and dry porcini mushroom for the tenderloin. For the sauce, it's butter, sherry, flat leaf parsley, garlic, shallots, and heavy cream. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So we're going to take about 1 ounce of the porcini mushroom and add it to the sherry wine. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, an ounce, but dry mushrooms weigh very little, so it's a good amount. You're going to just top it with the sherry wine, so that way I leave it even up to a day where it kind of sits in the sherry, reconstitute, flavors the sherry, but the sherry also flavors the mushrooms, so they get some really, there's a lot of flavor going on there. The other ounce is going to be put into a spice grinder and grind to a fine dust. I use the coffee grinder, like I mentioned. Coat the beef tenderloin medallions with the porcini dust. and mix some. I'll take the porcini dust, a little salt and black pepper, and I'll make my own little rub, mushroom rub, okay, for that. And so we go to cook it now. So we're going to sear in a heavy bottom saute pan or a skillet, medium-high heat. Add the oil, let it heat up but not smoke too heavy. Once the pan is ready, you're going to add the beef tenderloin medallions, four at a time. You don't never want to overcrowd a pan when you're searing, because you do want to get a little bit of crust on there. And the more you put in, the lower the temp gets, and then you're not searing. You're basically just sweating down meat, and that doesn't give you the same texture that you're looking for.
Right. Once you're not going to get the Maillard reaction.
How's there that you for go. Little science? I love that one.
Am I wowing you with science today?
Yeah.
Or what?
I love
blinding you
reaction.
With science.
I always find it. I love it. So what you're going to do is sear one side for about 2 minutes, and then you turn to sear the other side for another 2 minutes. I don't cook these long. 2 minutes to 3 minutes will give you kind of a rare piece. If you like it a little more done, you know, go to 3 or 4 minutes. So what I do is turn it over, but then I start butter basting. I add butter to the pan, and I take a spoon, and I start basting over the tenderloin. So as I'm cooking both sides at the same time. The part that's searing in the butter and the oil, and then on the top part, I'm adding the butter to the top so it's still cooking. You want to remove it in 3 to 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Can I interrupt you? Because that technique that Chef just described for y'all, that is the way to make a perfect sunny side up egg.
Oh, I agree too. That's perfect. Yes.
Yeah. People often serve the sunny side egg and they're like, ew, you know, the white's not cooked around the yolk. This is kind of gross. And believe it or not, the state of New Jersey not long ago actually outlawed the serving of sunny side eggs because they were concerned about the increased risk of salmonella, which is nothing to be concerned about. But in terms of flavor and preparation, what Chef just told you to do, that butter, that is the secret to a perfect sunny side egg. So you add a little butter and just put it around the yolk there, and that will cook that white that otherwise is sort of like a little bit of snot on an otherwise perfect, you know, that's why an otherwise perfect sunny side egg is snot so good. You know, so you that technique right there, we're using it to finish the beef here, but also keep that in your repertoire for
I love it.
Wowing folks with a perfect sunny side egg.
And I think butter basting is a lost art. The idea of doing that on certain fish too. I do that when I make my trout. I actually never flip the
salmon.
Trout over.
Huh? I do it a lot sometimes. I do it sometimes with salmon. Same
exactly,
thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
With the hot oil. Yeah. Baste it over.
And it does help a lot. You're cooking from both sides that way, and it keeps you at the pan, and it keeps you connected with your food instead of leaving it there and then going to do four other things, which sometimes I do.
But this dish that you're giving folks when they're making it, you know, this is not a long cook time. I mean, you just ran through the prep, right? Soak some stuff the day before, you know, 30 seconds in a coffee grinder, pat your medallions down, boom, you are ready to go. So this is not like an all day affair. This is something you're at that pan, but you're not going to be there long. This is something you can do easily on a weeknight.
Oh, it could be so quick that people think that you spent all day on this, and you really didn't.
Yeah, another wow. And
we
another
go wow factor, right, yeah. This is a great dish. Now, if you really want to wow a Valentine or you have a girl over or she's cooking for a guy or whoever for whoever, this is a great dish to make, totally go wow on it. And then when they eat it, they think you spent all this time taking care of them, except for the fact that tenderloin is really expensive. And so is porcini, which so you did, but it didn't take a lot of work. So we got
that's
the
love. That's the love part. That's the love part.
So the medallions are cooked. You want to let them rest while you create the sauce. So in the same pan, you have the oil and the butter. You're going to add shallots and garlic sauteed until soft. Then you deglaze the pan with the mushroom sherry stock. Now, we'll flambé on you, and you know me about telling people.
Yep.
You don't do as I do.
What? Okay. Send all your aflame pictures to at Chef Luca on Twitter. He loves them, folks. He loves them. You know, the more you're giving an impression of the Human Torch, the more impressed he is.
Oh my gosh! I try to get higher and higher flames. I think I set off a sprinkler once. Don't tell anybody about that one. But anyway, so try not to flambé at home. It never ends well, and I get phone calls afterwards, and I don't condone it. but I do it myself. It's like the race car thing, right? Or the ads for cars on TV, you know, professional driver, closed track. In this case, crazy chef, closed head.
Closed kitchen.
Closed kitchen. So you reduce the alcohol by half again on that, and after you were not flambéing, you're just reducing. So in this pan, we're going back to, we have shallots, garlic, we have the mushrooms, the sherry wine that was in the mushroom sauce. And you could use any wine again that you like, if you like Madeira or Marsala, or even a port wine, you could do that as well. And then I noticed, Chef,
that all the recommendations, you're using a fortified wine.
Yes.
If folks wanted, could they also deglaze like with a lovely red wine?
I think it's a preference thing. I have a gentleman who has asked me many times, well, what would I do if I don't want any alcohol in my cooking? I said, well, that's easy. You could use just a little bit of beef stock with the porcini mushrooms and use that to deglaze. Any liquid will work. The idea about the fortified wines, because they're just enhanced and more intense as they come down. So sherry, Madeira, Marsala. With the Marsala especially, you're going to get that, you know, that pop of sweetness that comes with it. It goes great with a pork or a chicken. And I love sherry in items. I love port wine. Again, that sweetness when you kind of get this port, cream, mushroom kind of combination. You got earthy. Yes. You got the sweet. It's a little bit more enhanced. The red wines, especially in French cooking, you know, you could do a nice Bordeaux or a simple red wine will have less of that pop at the end. You won't, but it'll still give you that beautiful finish that you're looking for.
And,
now, I always recommend, and this is the most important thing, don't use a wine that you're not willing to drink.
Right, absolutely.
If you're using red white wines.
And one of the things about when you do flambé, for folks that are concerned about this or have some questions about it, what's cooking off is actually the alcohol.
Right.
And so when you're reducing it, as Chef said, or if you decide that you do want to flambé it, you are cooking that alcohol off. So when you taste it, and I actually had somebody ruined a veal Marsala one time because they did not cook the alcohol off. And it's like, you know, if I want a cocktail, I'll have a cocktail.
Yes.
But the alcohol actually ruined the meal. So it's actually very important that there not be, you know, any residual alcohol there. So you want to cook that off. The other thing I think that's very important when chef's talking about deglazing a pan is you want to scrape up the goodies. So you're going to use that liquid. It's going to, you know, hit that hot pan. And then the fond or the little bits that are kind of adherent to the pan, you want to scrape those up and let those come loose. Because, that is a source of just intense taste.
It's a lot of flavor. That's where everything starts in any pan sauce is that base that you started with. Because we've seared the porcini mushroom dust and the steak and all that goodness into that pan, we want to get it back into our sauce now. And that's the best thing about pan sauces. And goes back to, when we go back to it, doesn't matter what liquid you're using. It could be a wine. It could be a stock. It could be simply water. But you want it to have some type of flavor. You know, that's where it's going to be. I've deglazed with everything from Worcestershire to vinegar to wines. To what was the strangest one? There have been some fun things, but I try to deglaze with anything because I want to see what's the next flavor that comes from it. So don't mess around with this dish. That's all I'm telling you, folks.
Tenderloins are expensive.
don't start going. Wait, I tried Worcestershire with this, and I ruined it. I was like, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, I tried a can of that Hawaiian punch. You know, I did a Red Bull deglaze. This is not the dish to be doing your Red Bull deglaze with.
Please don't do that. So we've reduced that down. Now, we've talked about doing pan sauces before by adding a fat into a pan sauce. What's great about a cream adding into it, it needs to be a heavy cream. 36% fat or higher is a heavy cream. Don't try and do a light cream or milk. That won't work this way. But that
also sold under heavy whipping cream.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing.
So what I would
stay away from is anything that doesn't say that. But what's great about doing a cream sauce is, one, it kind of brings all the flavors around together. And it's probably one of the easiest pan reductions to make for a pan sauces to make because it brings its own amount of liquid and fat to the party, adding it to the other stuff. Now, when you first put it in, it'll look very liquidy and a mess. And what you need to do at this point is evaporate some more of the liquid away so you have this beautiful, cohesive nappe sauce that kind of just coats the back of a spoon and doesn't move around. And then once it kind of reduces to that point, you know you've made a great sauce. Now, it's not going to curdle on you. It won't burn. You don't want it on super high heat, but you can bring it down, bring down the heat a little bit as it's cooking down. The moisture that's extra evaporates, and then you have that balance, and we've talked about it before, the balance of moisture to fat ratio, which will make a perfect sauce. And because you have the sherry wine and the pungent mushroom, it really works well with everything you're doing here.
Yeah, it's absolutely fabulous dish. And folks, as we were saying earlier, it may be a weeknight. It may be a Friday night or a weekend. You're looking for that special dish with some wow factor, but you don't want to be in the kitchen all day, and you want to be spending it with those. This is the dish for you. You head on over to ChefLucaParis.com. You can get more information. Head over to ChefDrMike.com. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletters. You're going to get these recipes and a whole lot more before each show each week. Chef Luke and I, we're going to plan our road adventure soon. So we're going to be for you coming to us out on the road there. We don't know when, where, but keep tuning in. We'll let you know. But until that time, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.